Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Postpartum depression is devastating to a mom, baby, the whole family. And it's common. It affects 1 in 9 new mothers, according to the CDC. Last week, the FDA approved the first drug specifically targeted for postpartum depression. Jeff Jonas, the CEO of the drugs manufacturer Sage Therapeutics, spoke to Bloomberg last week.
For us, the excitement really is that this is the leading medical complication of pregnancy. And if you look at the leading cause of death in pregnancy is suicide. So the opportunity to treat women with this really terrible disease is just, it's very exciting for us.
Exciting, but it comes with its own set of complications. This hour on Point, postpartum depression and a paradigm shift in women's health. Join us. Do you have you had postpartum depression? Did you seek help or suffer in silence? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Dr. Samantha Meltzer Brody. She's a professor of mood and anxiety disorders at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. She's also the director of the perinatal psychiatry program at the Center for Women's Mood Disorders. She ran the clinical trial for this new drug. And while the university received a grant from the pharmaceutical company for the trial, she was not compensated by the drug company. Dr. Meltzer Brody, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. I'm glad to be here today.
So tell me about this new treatment. What does it do? How does it work for women with postpartum?
Well, I'm glad to be able to talk and provide some context and would like to start by dispelling what I think may be a false dichotomy. This is a new medical treatment, and it's the first drug ever approved for postpartum depression. It is not a magic bullet. It is not fairy dust. And I think it's really important to highlight that major depressive disorder is one of the greatest causes of disease-related disability worldwide. And postpartum depression is one of the greatest causes of maternal mortality, as you mentioned in the opening, affecting 10 to 15% of women. It has been often ignored until very recently, not taken seriously. There's been immense suffering. And there's been a huge need for innovation in women's perinatal mental health and psychiatry more broadly. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we think about the last 30 years, we've largely been using the exact same treatments that, you know, I was taught in medical school in the mid-90s. And there is an enormous need for innovation in psychiatry. If we compare psychiatry to other fields, for example, cancer, we've been in a huge drought. And so having a new treatment that has a new mechanism of action is incredibly exciting. And I think something that has gotten the attention of the media, hence, you know, we're here talking about it. But what I want listeners to hear is that for any woman that's suffering with postpartum depression, it is not your fault. You have not done something wrong. The suffering is real. And you need to talk to your doctor to be screened and to get appropriate treatment. No one wants to have postpartum depression.
Right. So tell me about Zulresso, this drug that you tested and seems to have, quite good results.
So Zulresso or brexanolone, we originally had the opportunity to study at the University of North Carolina well over 5 years ago. We have one of the first perinatal psychiatry inpatient units that opened in 2011, and that allowed us to be poised to study an investigational drug originally as an open-label drug for women who were already admitted with severe symptoms. And what we saw in that first infusion was that a woman who came in horribly depressed, not eating, had lost a lot of weight, was not interacting with her baby, was having suicidal thoughts, that within the first day of treatment of a 60-hour infusion, she markedly changed. And that was extremely dramatic to see, huge improvement. She was interacting, she was smiling, she was eating so quickly. And I think that over the course of my career, for women that have disabling depressive symptoms, we are not talking about the baby blues. We are not talking about minor symptoms. We are talking about devastating symptoms of depression that kill people and markedly impair their functioning. And over the course of the trials through phase two and phase three, the initial results were replicated. Certainly in phase three, the dramatic response seen in the open label trial was replicated again. And we saw a placebo response that is expected in phase three trials. But importantly, the active drug still was statistically and significantly better than placebo, even though there was high anticipatory sort of excitement about coming in to receive an experimental therapy that had gotten a lot of buzz with the phase two press.
So let me hear from a Connecticut mom. This is Stephanie Hathaway. She suffered from postpartum depression after the birth of her second daughter. Last week, she spoke with ABC's Diane Macedo about her struggle and about how taking Zulresso helped her.
I was unable to make myself cook, unable to make myself clean, very difficult to take care of the baby. It was just a time of a lot of struggle, a lot of hopelessness, and a lot of fear.
But when antidepressants failed to help after her second birth, the 33-year-old decided to take part in a study for a new drug called Zulresso. Stephanie says she started to feel better within just a few hours.
The intrusive thoughts went away, and they did not come back. I called my husband, and I just remember my husband saying, "Wow, I haven't heard the you in your voice in so long."
So, Dr. Meltzer Brody, you say this is not a magic bullet. It is not fairy dust. I hear that. But there are a lot of women whose ears perk up and they think, wow, this could really help. I mean, this drug works quickly, right? Within 48 hours, which is a significant improvement over antidepressants, which take weeks to take effect if they work at all.
Absolutely. And I think that what you have to remember is the majority of women in the clinical trials responded to the drug. Approximately 70% had a meaningful response. And of those, 94% of those continued to have a maintained response over the 30-day of follow-up. So that's an enormous step forward. And I think that we need new treatment tools. Psychiatry needs new treatment tools. Women's perinatal mental health needs new treatment tools. However, just to highlight, again, this is something that will need to be personalized for every woman and her provider. It will need to be tailored based on severity of symptoms, her history. You know, I think that the perinatal period is such a vulnerable time, such a profound time for families. 100% of all women that give birth need to have support. And there's so much innovation that needs to happen in perinatal mental health, whether it's the ACOG new fourth trimester guidelines, figuring out new ways to support mothers. So 100% of women that deliver need support. And there's so many things that need to happen. However, for the 10 to 15% that have postpartum depression, innovative treatments are a huge step forward and really can save lives.
Let me get another voice into the conversation here from New Haven, Connecticut. Dr. Kimberly Yonkers. She's a professor of psychiatry, epidemiology, obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences at the Yale School of Public Health. She's also the director of the Center for Well-Being of Women and Mothers. Dr. Kimberly Yonkers, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane, and hi, Samantha.
Hi, Kim.
So, Dr. Yonkers, your response. You've spent your career studying pregnancy, neonatal, perinatal health. What's your reaction to the FDA approval of this postpartum depression treatment?
Well, first, I'd like to commend Dr. Meltzer Brody on her comments, because I guess it's an appropriate time to say that she is on point, right? But what she has to say is so accurate that postpartum depression and depression in general can just be an absolutely devastating illness. And all of us welcome any possible new quiver, if you or arrow in our quiver to combat this illness. I'm not so sure that we have been bereft totally of new treatments. So, for example, esketamine is an exciting new compound that was just FDA approved a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, and that is another rapidly acting antidepressant. And then we have things like transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is relatively new. However, this compound is very exciting for those of us in the field because this was tested in postpartum women. And typically what happens is a medication is tested for depression in general, and then it's applied to sort of subgroups, such as people with post-stroke depression or people with postpartum depression. Now, I want to underscore that as much as we welcome new treatments, that people should also recognize that the current treatments, which include psychotherapy as well as pills for antidepressant pills, also work very well. And, you know, 20 years ago, I was doing research and testing standard antidepressant treatments for women who had postpartum depression. And we did see about 30% improvement within the first week. The time course for what we have seen historically is much longer, to the magnitude of 1 or 2 weeks, compared to the response that Dr. Meltzer-Brody has seen in her studies.
So, Dr. Meltzer-Brody, talk about that. How long does this treatment last, Xarelto?
Well, it is a 60-hour infusion, so that's about 2.5 days. And the drug has been studied out so far to 30 days. And as I mentioned, of the women who responded, 94%, the overwhelming majority, continued to have a treatment response at 30 days. But it has not been studied past that point yet, and that's going to be a really, you know, important additional course of information to get.
Mm-hmm. And so who's a candidate? Who's a good candidate for this treatment, Dr. Meltzer-Brody?
So, you know, the drug is – just a few things to highlight. The drug is a formulation of allopregnanolone, which is a breakdown product of the hormone progesterone. And I think it's worth mentioning that in pregnancy, we have – normally, all pregnant women have high levels of estrogen progesterone, and at the time of childbirth in all women, those levels fall quickly. Allopregnanolone, the breakdown product of progesterone, has been known in animal studies and for a long time to have a role in treating potentially depression and anxiety. And that's why this new drug is specific potentially for women with postpartum depression and has a new mechanism of action for women with severe symptoms.
Well, we're discussing a new FDA-approved treatment for postpartum depression this hour, and you can join the conversation. Would this drug be a game changer for you? How has postpartum depression impacted your life? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We will be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about women's health this hour and modern maternal care in light of a new FDA-approved treatment for postpartum depression. And you can join the conversation. What treatment worked for you? If you're on the other side of this, what would you tell other new moms who are suffering? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. In 2005, actress Brooke Shields opened up about her struggle with postpartum depression in her memoir, Down Came the Rain. 10 years later, during a press conference in Washington advocating for legislation to invest in postpartum depression education, detection, and treatment, she vividly described her experience.
I wanted to die. I did know that I was incapable of holding or looking at or kissing or smelling or singing to my perfect tiny little baby. I did know that if I stayed too close to my baby, that I would start to feel weak in the knees and I would start to get dizzy and start to faint. I knew that I cried all the time. I still didn't know I had postpartum depression. I knew that I was beginning to seriously plan ways that I could disappear quietly but permanently.
Some of the symptoms, the devastating symptoms of postpartum depression. I'm speaking this hour with University of North Carolina psychiatrist Dr. Samantha Meltzer Brody and Dr. Kimberly Yonkers, a psychiatrist at the Yale School of Public Health. So, Dr. Meltzer Brody, we've talked about this drug, Zulresso, given by infusion. Zulresso, given by infusion over 60 hours. A mom must remain in a certified medical center during that time. The drug works quickly, within 48 hours. There is one criticism of this particular treatment, and you've been vocal about this. It's the cost. It's about $34,000 per treatment, and that does not include the cost, of course, of staying in a medical center during those 60 hours that it takes to administer the drug. Speak about the cost, doctor. This is not really accessible to women who might be at highest risk, right? What's your response to that?
Well, I think that in the clinical trials, what was really interesting is we had so many women participate who did not have health insurance and were not able to access any kind of care other than in a clinical trial. There is a huge problem in this country with access to mental health care, including currently available treatment. So as Dr. Yonkers mentioned, psychotherapy is often a first-line treatment for mild, moderate symptoms. Traditional antidepressants have been used, certainly, and those things will all continue to be used. But we have a huge problem with access to care and cost of psychotherapy and ways to deliver that and cost of treatment in general. I think that the cost of any new therapy is usually high. I definitely want to mention that I'm not involved in the commercialization of new drugs. And I think that as we see, you know, what happens with insurance companies, how this plays out over time, what will happen to ensure access to women that need this treatment? It's, I think, too soon to call. The FDA just approved this last week. And I think that the barriers of cost will need to be overcome. I certainly am passionate that anyone who would need this life-saving treatment would be able to get it, in the same way that someone who needs a life-saving treatment who has cancer or any other disease is able to receive that treatment. And I think that my hope is that there will be ways to have women who need the care get access. But certainly access and cost is a huge problem with currently available treatments. It will continue to be a new problem moving forward, and we're going to need to develop innovative ways to address those issues.
Dr. Yonkers, your response.
Well, I absolutely agree, and I would go a step further, actually, and say that the price put out for this medication, what Sage Pharmaceuticals wants to charge, is pretty astonishing. You know, I did a little bit of looking at the literature, and a lot of pharmaceutical companies will tell you that a number for development of a medication is about $2.8 billion. That has the assumption that only 11% of medications that are developed actually make it to market. So pharmaceutical companies need to compensate for all of those compounds that don't make it to market. When I looked at the audit reports for Sage Pharmaceuticals for 2014 to 2017 and then 2018, it seems that they spent under $1 billion, about $800,000. And this is just publicly available information. I have no private information from any company. So this is just what I was able to find that would be available to investors. So if you run the numbers and you consider that the cost of this particular medication is $34,000 and they want to recoup, let's say, you know, somewhere between $800 million and $1 billion, they need to treat 10% of the women who currently have postpartum depression to make back their costs.
Here is Jeff
Jonas.
So that's
just a little that's just a little bit of context for where we see the price set by this company. And I think it really, you know, dovetails nicely with some of the issues that Dr. Meltzer Brody was talking about, which is we have to make treatments available and affordable to people.
The drug manufacturer, by the way, says that a pill version of this treatment is still years away. Here is Jeff Jonas, the CEO of Sage Therapeutics, the company that developed this injection treatment for postpartum depression, telling Bloomberg last week that when it comes to the cost of the drug, the pricing is really about access and the benefits of his product.
We spent a lot of time proactively with payers, and we described what this product could offer. And if you think about the profile, first, rapid acting, one course of treatment, resolution of symptoms literally within hours and completion within, you know, 2.5 days, plus the fact that postpartum depression is a multi-generational disorder. It just doesn't affect the mother. It affects the family, workplace, everything. And even at our price of $34,000, very, very positive responses.
And here he is talking about a timeline for the oral version of his company's treatment for postpartum depression.
There's a lot of excitement about our oral molecule, which is SAGE-217. Mm-hmm. That has already completed 2 phase 3 studies for major depression and postpartum, and we have the third one targeted either by the end of this year or the beginning of next year.
So, Dr. Yonkers, do you see this broadly as a sort of a segue, this treatment as a segue to design other medications for postpartum depression that could be administered in perhaps an easier or more accessible way?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I think if we see this level of efficacy, it would be really nice to have both an oral medication and something that is less expensive. And, you know, just this week we're hearing about the White House wanting pharmaceutical companies, when they run ads, to put some information on the cost of various medications, because we have to bring down the cost of medications. You know, we just can't afford this as a society. So, you know, to see a rollout where a medication is costing $34,000, and, you know, Dr. Jonas is correct that it is a very rapid onset of action for this particular medication, and it's a one-off for 1 month, but what happens after that month?
Let me bring in now from New York, Jennifer Block. She's a journalist who focuses on women, health, and power. You can find a link to her New York Times op-ed headlined, "It will take more than a $34,000 drug to stop postpartum depression." That's at our website, On Point Radio. She's also the author of the forthcoming book, Everything Below the Waist, Why Healthcare Needs a Feminist Revolution. Jennifer Block, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So your reaction to this announcement?
First of all, I wasn't super surprised that the FDA approved this drug. The FDA tends to approve most of what comes through its doors. But, you know, I want to just pull back postpartum depression, we're sort of talking about it as if it's this inevitable thing that's going to impact 10 to 15% of women always. But, you know, we know that it has a relationship to how women are treated during their pregnancy, how women are treated during their birth, what kind of care they get during their birth experience, and how we as a society support mothers' families. So we know that we have higher rates of postpartum depression in countries with higher income inequality, with higher rates of maternal and infant mortality, and countries that, you know, focus more on work than life and the work-life balance.
Dr. Meltzer Brody, it seems like postpartum depression is something that's only migrated into our public consciousness in the last 10, 15 years. And you talked about this sort of stigma that surrounds it. I think Jennifer Block is talking here about some of the other factors that are contributory. How do you see what she's saying?
Well, I think that, you know, women's health has been something that's been highly neglected in this country. So Dr. Yonkers and others have been studying postpartum depression for many years, and there's reports going back to antiquity. I think that if we look how women are treated in the perinatal period, it is going to take all of us working together to improve things for mothers. So I wholeheartedly agree that there is enormous opportunity to improve the way we support mothers and women in this country. To start with, we're the only developed country, the United States is the only developed country in the world without a universal maternity leave. And that's egregious. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. And I think that all of us need to work together. I would say that as a psychiatrist, I see women, and Dr. Yonkers and others who see women with really severe symptoms, we are seeing women for whether it's genetic loading, early life trauma, you know, any number of factors that have made them vulnerable to postpartum depression. I think that it's a really exciting opportunity to talk with Jennifer and others about prevention. What can we do as a society to prevent depression in as many women as possible? I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that for women who perhaps have genetic loading or are biologically loaded, in the same way you can't prevent cancer in everyone, there are environmental factors and then there's biologic factors that are going to make some people at risk. But I think we all need to work together to figure out how are we as a society going to improve health for moms and families, and that this is something that really needs to have a multifaceted approach.
Let me get some callers in here. From Columbia, South Carolina, Sabria is on the line first. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. When I gave birth to my second child 8 years ago, I suffered from postpartum depression, but I just didn't know that's what was going on. I was extremely anxious, hopeless. I couldn't handle social situations. And looking back, it's obvious what was going on. But at the time, I just thought I was having a hard time. So even though treatment would have been available to me, I wouldn't have sought it because I didn't know that's what was going on. Mm.
Sabria, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Yonkers, you know, there's Sabria's story, and I think that's a common one. Women don't know what's happening to them, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes people just slip into pulling away, feeling sad, not really realizing what's going on. It can be very, very abrupt. But, you know, unless you've had the experience or unless you know someone who's had the experience or a physician has spoken with you about it, it can be very, very difficult. I mean, I've had people that I've made a diagnosis of a major depressive episode and they've absolutely denied having depressed mood, right? Depressed mood should be the hallmark of a mood disorder, a depressive disorder. But sometimes instead of it being frankly depressed mood, it's really a lack of interest. Nothing is garnering attention. Somebody doesn't want to do anything. You know, they're just really blasé. And they have these other symptoms such as, you know, dysregulation in their appetite and sleep and energy. So it can be very, very tricky as well as very severe.
Nicole is in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for waiting and welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I am just delighted by this discussion. I am 5 months postpartum with my second child and am just in the past 4 weeks coming out of what has been the most disturbing and painful time of my life with postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety as well. I knew early on that something was wrong and was having panic attacks, constantly feeling like I was in this dark hole, not wanting to be near my baby. I started bottle feeding him. I was pumping all the time because I just didn't want my baby on me. And, you know, I am breastfeeding now, and through therapy and getting on a low-dose antidepressant, I feel like, you know, I was able to pull myself out of that. But the thing I'm most thankful for about this conversation is that I feel like we don't talk about this and we don't talk about women's mental health issues. It's a taboo thing. And I had so many people asking me, is this real? Are you really sure? Or is this just hard? You know, two kids is hard. And I was thinking, oh my God, am I crazy? Like, no, yep. This is real. I can't get out of bed. I can't function as a mother, as a wife. And I am thankful that we're talking about this so that we can all be aware and help mothers in their most vulnerable time.
Nicole, thank you.
You
have four women
yeah,
here
absolutely.
That are acknowledging what you're
yes.
saying, and thank you very much. Yeah. Dr. Meltzer.
I'm nodding.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm nodding in New York. I mean, I think for people who haven't experienced having a baby, it's really hard to appreciate how intense it is to have this little living thing that needs to eat pretty much every hour in the beginning, right? For the first couple of weeks, you breastfeed, you put the baby down, you do whatever you need to do, or maybe, God willing, you take a nap, and then all of a sudden it's like all over again. It is so intense. And it's really heartbreaking to hear the caller, to hear Cindy Crawford talking. And I really think, you know, we need to be thinking about, you know, this is the hormonal connection, you know, from what I know is really real. We have a huge shift from pregnancy to childbirth. And, you know, I think we need to look at and ask about how we're disrupting the hormonal physiology of childbirth with typical maternity care. You know, most women are being induced or sped up with artificial oxytocin. Many women are going home with pelvic floor trauma or a cesarean scar. They've had major abdominal surgery. And then we interrupt the breastfeeding. We interrupt the fourth trimester. We give no support in this country, for paid leave so that fourth trimester can actually happen and normal physiological regulation can happen.
Well, we're discussing postpartum depression this hour, past and future treatment and the future of women's maternal health care. And you can join the conversation. How can we eliminate the stigma associated with postpartum depression and mental health more broadly, more generally? More with our guests and your calls after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there
on the top shelf.
That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the mental health of new mothers this hour, and you can join the conversation. What needs to change when it comes to maternal care in this country? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with University of North Carolina psychiatrist Samantha Meltzer Brody, Yale psychiatrist Dr. Kimberly Yonkers, and author and journalist Jennifer Block. Let's go to the phones. James is in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, James. Welcome to the program.
Yes, ma'am. I was just listening about the results of the, from the test or the drug that's been approved. Is this results going to last like a cure, or is it going to be a continuation where you have to keep the infusions going?
James, thank you. Dr. Meltzer Brody, I think you answered this earlier, but go ahead to James's question.
Yeah, James, that's a great question. And I think that what we know so far is that the results have been maintained in the overwhelming majority of women through 30 days postpartum. There needs to be a lot more research done to see what happens after that. And I think one thing to highlight is that not all postpartum depression is the same. There's been a lot of work trying to understand the difference between someone that's had multiple life traumas, multiple episodes of depression, living with poor social supports, who is now depressed in the postpartum period. That may be very different from a woman who has never had a mental health issue and has only the onset that's triggered by childbirth. So as we get more information, it may be that the response rate and the persistence of effect is different depending on the history. I think what I want to highlight, though, is this is such an exciting step forward for science. And new treatment tools is a very exciting and important step forward for psychiatry. This drug works with a new receptor, GABA-A receptor. The oral drug that you mentioned also works on GABA-A. If this is an ability to have postpartum depression be a window into new forms of treatment that may be effective not only for postpartum depression, but for major depression in general in men and women, that's a vital step forward. So I think we need to, you know, I am very thankful that we have a new drug, that we're understanding science in a new way, that it's a step forward for psychiatry and science in general. But again, for any individual person, the best treatment option and what's most appropriate is going to require thoughtful consideration and discussion with their doctor to understand the patient's preference. And all of these things, you know, really need to be individually tailored.
From Twitter, one listener, Aaron, says, I was encouraged to get help for postpartum depression within the first week after giving birth. I refused taking SSRIs because I didn't want to pass the drug to my baby via nursing. But 8 months later, I got on meds and I was much better. Dr. Yonkers, you have authored a big report on the management of depression during pregnancy, medication and all the rest. What's the effect on the baby via breastfeeding and all the rest? How do you see it?
Well, I want to reinforce that the American Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine does not suggest that people stop breastfeeding if they need an antidepressant medication. So we find that use of medication for depression is consistent with breastfeeding in general. So I would hope that people would not be deterred from receiving treatment because they're breastfeeding. And also, I would encourage people to consider psychotherapy, even if they are reluctant to take a medication because of the possible effects on the baby. Now, we really have very little in the way of enduring adverse effects from antidepressant medication that has been delivered via mom's breast milk. I mean, part of the issue is that many women who are on antidepressants and breastfeeding also took antidepressants in pregnancy, and so it's unclear whether some of the effects are due to what happened during pregnancy versus breastfeeding. But in general, and I would say this for both use of medication during pregnancy as well as the postpartum period, we do see some significant differences for women who have taken medication in pregnancy versus those who have not, but they are very, very mild and minor and typically not enduring. And I'm often asked, as I'm sure Dr. Meltzer Brody is, to provide a consultation for a woman who has a severe depressive disorder and needs treatment during pregnancy. And I think that it's a real problem if we discourage people from of taking the medication or using some of our treatment options while they're pregnant just because they're concerned theoretically about some adverse consequences.
Aaron, thank you so much for that question from Twitter. Let's go to Beth in Natick, Massachusetts. Hi, Beth. Welcome to On Point.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I suffered from postpartum depression. I'm hearing a theme of second pregnancies. It was my second child. I didn't suffer. It was my first. But my son was born almost 7 years ago. And in a way, I was almost grateful. It sounds strange to say, but I was almost grateful that I had struggled with depression in the past. I had never had such a severe episode, but I was in the hospital with a C-section for 5 days, and then we checked out at about noontime on Friday, and by midnight, I told my husband, I said, I have to go to the hospital. I'm not going to, I can't take it. I don't know what's going to happen to me, but I just feel like I'm going crazy. And I recognized that I had not been on my antidepressants during pregnancy because I didn't want it to have any effect on my son. And by the time I got out of the hospital, 5 days without sleep, you know, just the stress of new motherhood, even though I had a fantastic support system, I just knew. So 12 hours later, I was back in the hospital. I was hospitalized inpatient for a week. And then I had an outpatient program, a day program, 9 to 4 every day for 4 additional weeks. So eventually I did start to feel better and feel like I could cope again. But it really took such a long time and away from my firstborn, who was 8, and really understood that mom, you know, was having these issues. And this drug would have been a game changer for me. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who's researching and putting this in place, because I can't imagine going through that again. So.
Beth, thank you very much. Thank you for the call. Let me get another in here. Lindsay is on the line from Dayton, Ohio. We have a board full of calls. Lindsay, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I am a birth doula here in Dayton, Ohio. I also do postpartum work. And support is a big thing for me, and I'm thrilled about the drug. But I do want to encourage women to seek out additional support. I do work with low-income women and teen moms, and I think that there's a lot of postpartum depression involved in that just because of poor education. And I think that educating women on what could happen, what could go wrong, and the things that you could do to prevent it or to how to reach out once it does is really important, but also just the support system and having somebody that's educated in it enough to point it out when you see that something's not right, but somebody else who's been educated can see just a little bit more and can kind of show you which way to go with it.
So great, Lindsay. Thank you so much. Jennifer Block, you write about this and some of the factors surrounding postpartum depression, you know, income inequality, work-life balance out of whack. I mean, there are a lot of things that are at play here, to Lindsay's point, Jennifer.
Right. I mean, you know, one big question I have about the drug and whether, you know, this how big of a step forward this is the placebo effect. You know, 50% of the women did better just having 3 days in a facility, probably getting really good sleep, because it seems like one side effect of this drug is that it causes some drowsiness and maybe dizziness and also unconsciousness, which is why women need to be in a center. So that big placebo effect was for me a big flag, and maybe, you know, we really need to look at that. And as we write in the op-ed, you know, is that the key here? You know,
Dr. Melzer Brody,
I mean, if a woman has a C-section and loses 5 days of sleep, and that, you know, that throws her in, that's, you know, that's indicative. Women need more support.
I wholeheartedly agree, Jennifer, that more support is vital. But as a practicing psychiatrist for a very long time and on our perinatal psychiatry unit and caring for women with postpartum depression, I can tell you that just admitting to our inpatient unit and getting sleep does not result in the treatment effect we saw with this drug. So placebo effects are well documented in all clinical trials of depression. The placebo effect we saw in the phase 3 trial in no way is a surprise. What's most impressive, though, is that the active drug beat placebo. And so I think that I don't think a false dichotomy is actually helpful for all of us. I think that we're all on the same page and all advocating for the same thing, which is we need to provide care and support for perinatal women. And women, all women who give birth need support and care. As a perinatal psychiatrist, for women that suffer from postpartum depression, they absolutely must be diagnosed and treated. And anyone who's on, you know, listening, who's suffered, who's suffering now, getting care, reaching out to family and friends, talking to your doctor, finding the most appropriate treatment is vital. And I think this new drug will be an important new tool in the toolbox for so many women that have sent me emails over the last week since the approval across the country saying, thank you. This could have saved my sister's life who committed or completed suicide. This could have saved me. And so I think that we can't discount the fact that rapid onset of action is really a game changer, and that rapid onset of action is a paradigm shift for how we think about treating depression. That is profound. And the issues around access and cost 100% need to be addressed. But I think we have to celebrate the scientific achievement, and we have to continue to work together to improve the way we support and care for women. But, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, in my experience, just because someone's admitted to a hospital and into our inpatient psychiatry unit, we have never seen this kind of rapid onset of response and remission of major depressive symptoms like we saw in the study.
Let's go back to the phones. Lisa is in Boca Raton, Florida. Hi, Lisa. I'm glad you waited. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I do, as a nurse and a lactation consultant who work with these mothers and babies, I think this discussion of treatment is so important. But something that we really need to open up is also the discussion on how our moms post-vaginally are seen sooner than 4 to 6 weeks. As we all know, moms, as we're listening, don't always understand the symptoms or know when to get help. So I think as our professionals, we need to do better in that 4 to 6 week area to help them understand and get the help that they need.
I agree, Lisa. Thank you, Dr. Yonkers. Yeah. We're taking our babies to the pediatrician more often than we're taking ourselves to the doctors post-birth.
That's right.
Yeah,
One of the things that we're actually seeing now is pediatricians are starting to embrace screening moms when they come in with their babies. And I think that's terrific because the more times that we have an opportunity to check in with mom, whether it's at a 6 week postpartum check or whether it's when she brings her baby in for a checkup or whatever, the more opportunities we have to really figure out whether somebody is suffering from postpartum depression. But I also want to contribute to the conversation that we just had, and I want to reinforce that, you know, we want to do everything we can to make the experience and make the support optimal. But what we just heard from one of the people who called in is that she was uncomfortable receiving the treatment that she, in all likelihood, needed because she was concerned about the impact of it on her child. And that is an absolutely reasonable concern. But I think we have to be very, very cautious in saying that if we can get the correct amount of support and if we can make sure that somebody is being checked earlier, that that is going to make this go away. What we see for major depressive episodes are these are biologically based, whatever the trigger may be, and there needs to be a correction, especially for the people who have severe illness. There needs to be some sort of correction that is also biologically based. So we can make tons of changes, and we should make a number of changes, including increased support and maternity leave, paternity leave. But we also have to be very, very cautious in saying that if we do these things, it will all go away. Or if we don't do these things, that somebody is at fault, you know, whether it's the husband that is not available enough or the fact that somebody is perhaps doesn't have a spouse of some sort.
Right.
We have to be very, very careful to not put major depressive disorder in a box that's different from hypertension and diabetes and other real biological, physical illnesses.
Agree 100%. Let's get David in here. I want to get you in Richmond, Virginia. David, you're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a wonderful conversation you're having. I support it completely. You may be wondering why a man is calling in. It's just that my daughter, lost my daughter almost 2 years ago to postpartum depression. I think the most important thing that we can do out of this whole conversation is help to raise awareness for maternal mental health. The number one women's health concern is cancer, and Susan G. Komen is doing a wonderful job of that. The number two is heart disease, and the American Heart Association is doing a wonderful job for that. But perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, the maternal mental health movement, does not have a run for the cure. We don't have something that raises the public consciousness, makes it aware. So
my clock is ticking, David. I've got to get Dr. Meltzer Broder to respond here. I do appreciate your call. Thank you so much, Samantha.
David, I'm heartbroken to hear that you lost your daughter, and that's exactly what fuels my work, and I know Dr. Yonker's work and all of us who are working to raise awareness and increase our ability to effectively treat women that suffer from severe postpartum depression. It's devastating. It's horrendous. There's such shame and stigma. And just to highlight what Dr. Yonker said, it is a medical condition.
Right.
It is not someone's fault
right.
that they got postpartum depression. It needs to be treated with evidence-based medical treatments.
And suicide is one of the greatest causes of maternal mortality. Half of postpartum cases go undiagnosed. This is such an important conversation. Dr. Samantha Meltzer Broder, University of North Carolina psychiatrist, led this study of Xarelto. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Broder. Really appreciate
your time.
Thank
you for having me.
Dr. Kimberly Yonkers from Yale University psychiatrist. Dr. Yonkers, thank you for being part of the conversation.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And Jennifer Block, journalist and author of the forthcoming book, Everything Below the Waist. We appreciate your time. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, thank you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.